Good morning. How's everyone doing? It's so good to be with you all. When I told my wife that I got invited back to speak at the admin conference, she just started laughing. And she's like, "You have no administrative bone in your body." And I'm like, yeah, I know. She's like, "When is it?" I'm like, "I don't know." And I have to tell you, though, there's a couple of groups of people in ministry that I just always feel profoundly thankful for. Junior high volunteers, profoundly thankful for. Yes. Tech volunteers, production volunteers, profoundly thankful for. And you all. And I feel like I've been asked by every pastor in America to come here and just say thank you. Thank you. And it gets me a little emotional because the roles that don't say that, say that. But really, from the bottom of my heart, just to say thank you, because everything that you all carry as women and men in leadership, that people do not see. You are the front door to crazy. You are the guard dog of our calendars. You are the person that can recognize if we are, as lead pastors or teaching pastors, just drowning in doubt. Because people who get up in front, they gain energy very quickly, but they lose energy even more quickly. And you see us at our best. You see us at our worst. You in many ways are spiritual uncles and aunts and grandmas and grandpas to our kids. You have, in my opinion, some of the most informational power and influential power within the local church. At Willow, her name was Jean Blount, and she was a 75-year-old woman. But that woman was as sweet as can be, and she could walk you right out the front door as sweet as can be. You walk into her office, and Chris Tomlin was just rocking out, and she would be worshiping God. But man, if you tried to play her, was not going to happen. And she might be 5'4". 110 pounds at 75 years old, but she knew what number to dial and what codes to push to get you just nicely ushered out. But she knew the soul. She knew the heartbeat. And I just know for many of you, you carry this day in and day out, and nobody sees you. I mean, the pastor sees you. But like, sometimes people see right through you to try and get to the person in charge. Sometimes people talk with such passive aggressiveness to you because they think they know best and they think that you're not helping them. And all of the emotional, spiritual, we're not even getting to details yet, but everything that you all have to carry on the regular, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you. From every pastor in America who has the guts to say it or not, thank you. And what I want to really speak about today is about your own personal spiritual formation. This will probably be not like a hype-up session. This will hopefully be the most intuitive, reflective, I'll never be invited back kind of speech ever. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. I'm watching so many pastors not finish the race. Every time I get done teaching on a weekend, the thing I tell myself, I'm one weekend closer to finishing well. The same thing is true with a lot of EAs, executive assistants. Because everything that we are carrying, everything that we are doing, everything for Christ and for God and for church and for the pastor and for the institution and for the organization, if we're really, really honest, For many of us, I think we're just surviving. And this is why moments like this matter so much. We have time just to ground ourselves, center ourselves, remind ourselves it's not what we do for him or for her or for the institution. It's most important what is happening in us and who we are actually entering in, and that is Christ and Christ alone. So a couple years ago, I did the dumbest thing, and I bought a little cabin in a city called Sholo, Arizona. Sholo is a city that was named after a poker game, where two guys decided to play poker because they wanted to gamble, and they're like, let's just gamble some land. And whoever loses, got to give me the land, and the other person gets to name it. So they named it because the game of poker was which card was the lowest, and they named it Sholo. So if you go down the main street, it's called Deuce of Clubs, which is just awesome. Our logo is like a two of clubs. It's fantastic. So we bought this little cabin, and this was like the picture of it when we bought it. And I walked in, I was like, okay, we can't travel during COVID. This is fine. We'll be able to get out of the Arizona heat. I'm not an Arizona kid. My wife's name is Sarah. She's from Arizona. I referred to it as the great state of Sarazona because I met her. But I'll tell you, it gets so hot there. I mean, it's so hot. And everyone's like, it's a dry heat. No. Anything over 110 is the pit of hell, all right? It's the greatest evangelism strategy of all time. I walk up to people, I'm like, hey, this could be your reality for eternity. Or there's Newport Beach. You know what I mean? Like, there's this. So we buy this cabin, and up in Sholo, it's tiny. It's like basically 30 degrees cooler. And so we buy this, and I'm like, this is great. And my wife goes, it has great bones. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means. But I'm sure that's what Chip and Joe say. So like I walk in, I see it. You've got this, like, teal green carpet. You've got drop-down ceilings. It's kind of an A-frame with all the woody paneling at the top. And my wife's like, we gotta demo the whole thing. And I'm like, no, wait, what? We? And demo? What are you talking? I have no administrative skills. When I go to Home Depot, it gives me anxiety. I literally have a short breath prayer that I pray, dear God, father me through this. Lead me to a man or woman in an orange apron. She's like, no, we can do this. We can do this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So we start to demo. And I'm like ripping down the drywall, which I didn't really mentally think about it. So just knocking, the whole thing just starts to drop down. And all of a sudden, I'm having the time of my life doing this. It's been amazing what's taking place. And then, in the moment of tearing up the carpet, ripping out the drywall, once we do it, it'd almost be like the drywall was blocking all of these windows. And all of a sudden, when we drop the drywall, all of this light, natural light, comes in. And I felt as if like the presence of God was saying, Steve, this is what I've been trying to do in your heart. Open you up so that you can experience more of my light and love. So after about 9 months, this is kind of what it looks like now. Yeah, look at that, huh? Look at that. And so like but it's all open. It's super just like clean, and I just walk in there. And what I realized was, oh my goodness, this is what Christ wants to do in us. And somehow over the years in ministry, we just start adding drywall ceiling. Can I just use this one? Is that all right? So what's incredible is you start. It's check, there we go. Okay. They're like, this kid, who is this guy? Okay, so here's the deal. We end up doing this, and I have this profound sense that, like, this is what Christ wants to do in us. And for so many years in ministry, it's like we just start adding drywall ceiling and teal carpet. And almost picking up different things from the decades of ministry, and it crowds us out. And I think what we want to be is people who are so gracious and filled with the Spirit of God. But sometimes over ministry, especially with everything we carry,
Oftentimes, what ends up happening is all of the experiences, the church hurt, the people that were on staff that are no longer on staff, the families that were attending our church but now left, all of the stuff that we've had to carry, the secrets, all of the stuff we've had to carry, it just starts to crowd us out. And instead of being in Christ, we then go to what can I do for him? And so this is what I want to go after. Let's go to the next slide. There's a great verse in Hebrews chapter 6, 19. It's become this anthem for me. We have this hope. We have this hope. A sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. And I think about this because when we think about hope, oftentimes the way that we define hope is centered around uncertainty. You know, I hope that the Lakers make the playoffs. They didn't. But it's all based on uncertainty. You know, I hope that there's no traffic so that I can get to the airport on time and make my flight. It's based on uncertainty. I hope that all the kids can make their flights and be here for Father's Day brunch at the home. All based on uncertainty. But when this writer in Hebrews says this, we have this hope, he's not talking or she's not talking. We don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews. I choose to believe it was a woman. But we have this hope, and this hope is actually based in confidence. It's a sure and steadfast. Some translations say a firm and secure anchor for our soul. And so when you have this hope, you can literally desire something to be good in any situation, because if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. And if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. That means that resurrection brings a level of confidence and certainty so that you can look at any situation and expect good to come, not on your timing, but on God's timing. So when he says we have this hope that anything is possible within us and around us and for us and through us, why? Because we have a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. So some of you are like, well, Steve, it's not possible, man. I just have so much work that would have to be like done in my heart. No, we have this hope. What God wants to do is shape and form something beautiful and profound in you. And if you've ever seen anchors, I mean, they're amazing. But if you start to go out to the Pacific Ocean, you go out to Lake Michigan, you know what you're going to find? You're going to find a lot of anchors at the bottom. I had this happen once at Lake Michigan. I was out with a friend of mine, and we took the anchor, and he was like, hey, let's put it down. And I threw it in, and it was not connected to the boat. And this is not like a cheap boat, right? And this is the crazy piece. He's like, this piece, this anchor is connected to something that has so much value. And what this writer is saying, like, we have a hope, a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. This is Jesus. But if you're like me, you have this anchor, and you're holding on to it. And you can hold on to it in the good times. You can hold on to it on Sunday morning. You can hold it on to it like at a Wednesday meeting. But then there comes a moment when that same person calls for the 30th time trying to get to the pastor, and they just minimize you. That all of a sudden you just drop the anchor and you start thinking thoughts or saying things from passive aggressiveness, or you get a little bit testy with them and you hang up. It's amazing, because deep down, the quest for every one of us is going, how in every moment of every day do we hold on to this anchor? And so what I want to do today is I want to teach you this. I want to teach you how to do this when it comes to renovating the heart. And this comes from time that I got the privilege to spend with Dallas Willard to learn from him. But I want to give this to you to make this so uber practical so that you can actually become the kind of person that literally embodies the fruit of the Spirit in any situation, in any circumstance, in any moment of any given day. Let's go to the next slide. I love this passage because Jesus is preaching in John chapter 10. And in John chapter 10, he begins to offer up two visions. Two visions. And you got to understand that it's amazing. I will sit with sincere Christ followers who work in the local church. And I'll ask them, what's the vision for your life? And they will tell me the vision of the church that they work for. I'm like, no. I'm not talking about the vision of your, I'm talking about your personal vision. And Jesus offers this up. He says there's two visions that are at play every single moment of every single day. And it's this: the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. If you take those words, steal, kill, destroy. If I want to steal something, you have something that I want. If I want to kill, I want there to be no life. But if I want to destroy, I want there to be no sustainable legacy. So you got to understand that there is a thief that wants to steal the love or the joy or the peace or the patience that you have. And not just steal it, but wants to actually kill that. Wants to block it out from actually embodying and living in your heart. And wants you to literally, your gifting, your heart to be destroyed so that there's no lasting legacy of what you bring to this place called earth. But Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And he's not saying this from a place of empty. He's not speaking going, okay, aspirationally, this is what I'm trying to do. He's saying, no, this is what I have come. In the face of every moment where you will be able to drop the anchor, I am trying to help you see that what I have to offer you, the living water I have, the bread of life, everything that I've come to offer you is so that in any moment of any day, you can have life and have it to the full, be overflowing in the goodness. Do you have a vision? Do you have a vision for you, for your spiritual life, for what God is doing and birthing in you? For me, I think about the fruit of the Spirit. If you look at this, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Just think about this. If we were the kind of people who had a vision, well, what other fruit do you need in this season? You know, what I really want to do is I want to get very, very practical here. Because the craziest thing that I've realized is nobody drifts to being a person that embodies the fruit of the Spirit. It's not like you woke up one day and you're like, the craziest thing happened. I've got patience. It's amazing. I'm gentle with my kids. This is something we have to work at. This is something we have to put time at. It doesn't just happen. Nobody just wakes up and goes, craziest thing. I preach like Billy Graham. You don't drift towards this. And so there's a moment for each of us where we have to be able to kind of identify in our own life, is there some area that we need to grow at? Some part that maybe we're just not living in. Of all those nine, is there one right now that you go, gosh, in me, this would be a little bit of the renovation that would need to happen within? And for some of us, it might be peace. For some of us, it might be self-control. That would be for me. For some of us, it might be faithfulness or goodness. It might just be joy. I mean, these are fights that we have to actually be the people who embody these. And what we're going to do as we move towards this is I'm going to help you write a little vision so that you can actually put this into play, so that God can actually begin to renovate and form and shape you. For me, my vision is simply this. And when you think about vision, it's this just one God-inspired way to be more like Jesus. That's what Dallas taught me. It's just one God-inspired way to be more like Jesus. You don't have to try it. You're not creating a 501c3. You're not creating a board. You're not raising money. This is about just one God-inspired way to be more like Christ. And really, that's what Christian means. Christian means little Christ. And part of our spiritual formation is, what are the steps? What are the moments that we're taking throughout our day to be more shaped and formed into the likeness of Christ? That's why we got into this in the first place. So that Christ could have more room and reign in our life, but often when ministry happens, we lose it. My vision is simply this. It's been this way for the last year. A life anchored in Jesus is one that has nothing to prove, nothing to lose, and nothing to hide. Nothing to prove. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. My mantra is, if I'm not winning, I'm sinning. But when you have a phrase that just can wake you up in the morning, this is what it's about. Just one God-inspired way to be more like Jesus. I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to be afraid that I'm going to lose something, because in the kingdom of God, it's all mine. And I don't have to hide. I don't have to pretend. But when you have this kind of vision that just allows you to rest in, you now have something to actually take steps to grow and to become. But underneath the vision, you have to understand, Dallas would talk about this word, intention. And what's amazing is intention is important. Intention is this whole concept that you literally make decisions each and every day. But these decisions, and every single day, 35,000 choices come your way. They come your way. But what Dallas would say is that you have, and I have, we have an impulsive will. An impulsive will is just simply, I just do what I want to do. So in a moment, somebody calls you, or somebody like threatens or says something, and all of a sudden we drop the anchor and we get people-pleasing or passive-aggressive or angry, or we power up or we power down. But the impulsive will is we just do what we want to do. We're disconnected from our vision, and we just do what the flesh wants us to do every single day. But Dallas said there's something more beautiful. He called it the reflective will. And the reflective will is when you actually can experience something coming at you, and you reflect and ponder on what will truly help me live into Christ and live out my vision. So all of a sudden, I can respond, or I can react. And just know, anytime you react, you're just reenacting the past. But when you respond, you're like leveling up. And what's so incredible is when you begin to reflect and ponder, if I say yes to this, will this help me embody my vision? If I say no to this, will I still be able to hold this sure and steadfast anchor for my soul? And when you begin to think this through, what begins to take shape and form in you is knowledge and wisdom. Now, what's amazing is underneath impulsive will and underneath reflective will is something called embodied will. Embodied will. And that's just the muscle memory that builds over time due to your choices and actions. So, how many of you, the last thing you do before you go to bed is pick up your phone? And the first thing that you do when you wake up is pick up your phone. And if you don't pick up your phone, you all of a sudden start having phantom vibrates in your leg, like, I'm missing something. Something is not here. And all of a sudden, that's an impulsive will that has become an embodied will, because there's muscle memory in your body to say, oh, this is what I do every night before I go to bed. This is what I do every morning when I wake up. This is what I do to get ready. This is what I do every single day. But here's the crazy piece, is impulsive will, and if you're a child of an alcoholic, your parents came home, and on a Tuesday night, they drove into the garage, and they opened a refrigerator, and there was a whole six-pack of beer, and they just did that. And they did the same thing on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And it was an impulsive will, but it had become an embodied will, because that was just the muscle memory at which they handled their life. But the crazy thing is, when you actually can have a reflective will, and you actually can start to think, will this help me be a person that has nothing to prove, nothing to lose, nothing to hide, and I can make decisions anchored in that? It too will grow muscle memory. If some of you in this room are saying, I need to grow in patience, you know what God's going to be so kind to do? Put you in impatient situations. And when you can reflect and ponder, say, no, I'm choosing to trust you. I'm choosing to anchor my life in you. I'm choosing to be sure and steadfast, because you're the hope. You're the anchor of my soul. And when you start to reflectively make decisions, what ends up happening? You become a patient person. Again, nobody just drifts towards holiness. It takes intention. And that's what intention is all about. Intention is our personal decisions day by day to overcome and become like Christ every single day. And especially when it comes to leadership, especially when it comes to assisting and administrating, especially when it comes to the executive functions that every single one of you hold, we don't want to just do stuff. We want to actually become these mini Christs for our leadership team, for our church, for the young staff that look up to us. We want when people look at us, they see Christ at work in us. But it's great. It's great that you have a vision. And it's great that you can actually have the intention to say, I'm going to do this. But here's the other piece. Is that you actually, and Dallas would talk about this, you have to have what he would refer to as means or methods. And that is the specific method and practice to shape and form and help you live into this vision. So what I'm saying here is this is why spiritual disciplines for many, many years has been something that's been so important. Because again, you don't just drift towards being a patient person. Dallas would tell this great story where somebody came up and confronted him. And people were watching this. John Ortberg, I think, was there. And Ortberg watched him just get basically assaulted verbally by this person. And Dallas could have destroyed him because he was genius. But John asked him after, why didn't you just take that guy down? And Dallas said, because my means for the month is learning the art of not having the last word. Can you imagine some people on your staff, if they actually practiced that for a month, they didn't have to have the last word? Like, what would that be like for you? If you want to be a person of peace, what's actually going to be the practice that you put into place to shape and form you? And it might be you just got to have a moment of every morning listening to worship and journaling. Maybe for some of you, it's, I need to go hiking. Maybe for some of you, it's a day of solitude. Maybe it's Sabbath. Maybe for some of you, you're learning gentleness, and you're like, I have to fast from social media for a day, a week. Just because when I get on it, it makes me compare, and it makes me feel less about myself, and I'm not gentle. I get really angsty. But what's the practice that will help you in the situation when it comes, because it will come, that you will have trained your brain, you've practiced so that you can become this kind of person. For me, friends, this has been an absolute game changer. And I'm telling you what, many, many people, they go, I don't have the time for that. But I'm like, you really, really do. And the more that you raise in leadership, the more that you are the front door to the executive team or the leadership team or the management team or whatever you call it, the more that you have to be the kind of person that when people's around you, they feel safe. The kind of person that when they look at you, they're, man, I feel like I'm in the presence of Christ. Even for the pastors, when they get around you, they don't feel you stressed. They feel you at such a peace, then that frees them up to be at their best. And nobody drifts towards that. Let's go to the next slide. I love what Dallas said, and he taught me this. Grace is opposed to earning, but never opposed to effort. And I imagine for some of you, you might be saying, Steve, I feel like I have so much work in my life, and you're asking me to do more work. And this isn't, for me, the work. I'm not asking you to earn your grace, but the beauty of grace is that it was sanctifying. It's not just to get you into heaven. It's actually so that heaven can invade here. So that you can open up your life so that more peace and goodness and patience and kindness can take root in you. Vision, intention, means. Vision, intention, means. So here's what I want to do. I want to bring this back, and I want to make this so, so practical. I want to put up the fruit of the Spirit. It's the last slide. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And I want to just give you a moment to just consider. In 2018, I went through a really, really difficult season. And I remember Bob Goff, who's been this bizarro pseudo-mentor from afar. Every time he'd come to Chicago, he would teepee my house, which was just weird. this 60-year-old guy just making balloon animals and teepeeing people's homes. And I'll never forget, he came in and he said, "Steve, how you doing?" I'm like, "Man, I'm just feel really, really heavy." And he just said, "Hey, which way is north?" I'm like, "What? Like, which way is north?" I think I just pointed up. I'm like, "I don't know, up?" He's like, no. And he pulls out of his pocket this compass. It's a kiddie Disneyland compass. And he's like, okay, yeah, that's north. That's north. And he goes, "Hey, you know what's amazing? The Bible says all you have to do is fix your eyes on Jesus. He's the author and perfecter. We have to fix our eyes on true north. That's where you got to go. That's where you got to take people." And then he hands me this compass. He hugs me and goes, "You can do it, buddy." And he leaves. For so many years, I've carried this compass in my pocket. This compass and also the Serenity Prayer from AA. And there's things I can't change. But there's some things I can change. There's some things that I can open my life up to. And I think every one of us wants to be someone where one of those fruits of the Spirit just is alive in us. And all we have to do is look to Jesus. So can I just be a little can you just be transparent with me for a minute? How many of you looked at this list just with a show of hands would say, "In this last season, man, if I had to choose one of those that my life needs most, it would be love." How many of you would choose love? Yeah. How many of you would choose joy? Show of hands. Thank you. How many of you would choose peace? Yeah. How many of you would choose patience? Yeah, it's right. There's fast. How many of you would choose kindness? Okay. How many of you would choose goodness? Okay. Faithfulness? Yeah. Gentleness? Self-control, that's what I would choose. What if in this moment you could look from now till Independence Day, July 4th? You look from now to July 4th and maybe just write a little vision. A life anchored in Jesus. It's one that when I feel anxious, I'm going to choose peace. Or in moments of scarcity and fear, I'm going to choose patience. In a moment of whatever that is, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I want to give you a moment right now to think about this. Again, nobody drifts towards holiness. Nobody drifts towards being a person that bears the fruit of the Spirit. There has to be a willingness to renovate the mind and the heart so that more of Christ can live in you. What if you just wrote just a little phrase? And then, underneath means or methods, you thought to yourself, what's a practice? What's one little practice I can do so that I can actually attack this? So that I can actually open my mind and my heart to be more like Christ. If you live in California and you want to grow in patience, just wake up and get on the freeway at 6 a.m. and stay on that freeway till 9 a.m. You'll learn patience. But what's a practice? Maybe I'm going to listen to music in the morning. I'm going to be in the Word. I'm going to go hiking. It doesn't have to be uber spiritual. It's just you being open and commit to it. And you all are planners. You know the difference of putting something in pencil and putting something in ink. But think about when you would do this practice. And try to get as uber practical as possible. I do it Mondays on my Sabbath, or I do it every morning at 7 a.m. after I've had my coffee, or I do it when I get first thing to work. I do it during my lunch break. And if you try this for a few weeks, you know what's going to happen? Is you're actually going to be in a moment and you're going to like look back at this and go, oh my goodness, I've actually become a person of peace. The impulsive will say, just get angry, chase this, do this. But you know what? All of that will give you a fleeting sense of peace. But if you do the vision, the intention, the means, you will become a person of peace. You will become a person of self-control. You will become a person of goodness and love and joy. And can you imagine in moments of anxiety or stress or craziness that comes your way every single day at the local church, if you could be someone who embodied this? What that would do for you? What that would do for your family, what that would do for your team, what that would do for the church. So I want to give you just a moment, just to kind of write. 90 seconds, 2 minutes, don't try to make it perfect. Just try and put something down. Try to consider a practice. Try to consider a time. And just kind of write. And then I'm going to lead us in a prayer, and then we're going to sing a song just to kind of respond to this moment. Write, type, think, consider.